Right, we are good to go. Justin, can you still hear me?
Okay. I can.
Excellent news. All right. Thanks, everybody, for taking part. We've got a whole load of people on the call today. Hopefully, you can hear us fine. There's going to be just a few slides during this. It's not a huge number. So if for any reason the slides aren't working amazingly, which sometimes happens with the software, then please don't worry about it. I'm very excited today that I'm going to be talking with Justin Webb. In my opinion, he's one of the top experts in the country around physical activity behavior change. We work together at Macmillan Cancer Support on the Move More Pack and behavior change emails and a few other things as well. And the pack and behavior change emails is what we're going to be talking about today mostly. And what they do is they support people living with cancer to get and stay active using a variety of different behavior change techniques. And they've proven to be really effective at supporting people. And Justin's now a lecturer over at London Metropolitan University and is doing his PhD on the effects of the pack and the emails, amongst other things as well. So on today's call, we're going to be talking about the award-winning Move More Behavior Change Pack and the support and why they've worked so effectively, the stages of change model and how we use that to plan out the email structure for supporting people on an ongoing basis, the 40 different top behavior change techniques for engaging people in physical activity, and which techniques we used in the pack and the behavior change emails and how that was chosen, and some ideas that you can implement locally. And then at the end, we're going to have a Q&A session with the questions that you asked when you registered at the beginning. So just a quick word from our sponsor. So the call today is sponsored by my company, Make Sport Fun. And I'm just going to have a couple of words explaining about us. So are you frustrated with engaging inactive people into your activities? And do you ever end up reaching active people and they take part more rather than the inactive people that you really want to reach? Do you ever find that the people you talk to say they want to get active, but then when you put the activities on, they don't turn up? Do you find you're expected to do marketing, but your background's in sports development and you don't have training in marketing? If so, that's what we're here to help with. Make Sport Fun is here to help with all those problems. And what we do, we offer a range of services to help you engage more inactive people into your activities using marketing, particularly digital marketing, but broader than that as well. So whether you need someone to run a campaign for you or show you how to use social media or other digital techniques like SMS and email to engage more inactive people from hard-to-reach groups, or if you need someone to conduct some research into your audience or you need someone to train local sports clubs, whatever you need, we're here to help. We've done work with over 100 organizations in sport and activity. We've got an average feedback score from clients of 9.2 out of 10. And as far as I know, we're the only marketing agency who specializes in engaging inactive people from hard-to-reach groups. So whatever your needs, just get in touch with us. You can email me, john@makesportfun.com. That's J-O-H-N, john@makesportfun.com. Or I'll explain at the end of the interview how you can book a call directly into my calendar as well. So that's all done with. Justin, thanks first of all for coming on the call today and sharing your experience with everybody.
No problem.
Can you give everyone a quick overview? I know I've talked very briefly about it, but kind of who you are, like what you were working on at Macmillan and what Macmillan's doing around physical activity.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been working in public health for many years now. Before I was at Macmillan, I worked for St Mary's University in a knowledge transfer unit called the Centre for Workplace and Community Health, and we delivered training and evaluation and consultancy, as well as program delivery around trying to change predominantly lifestyle behaviours using behaviour change theory and applying behaviour change theory to actual delivery, trying to overcome sort of the, you know, what happens in research to actually what happens in practice and trying to overcome that sort of knowledge do gap. From there, I worked in Macmillan and had an opportunity, a really wonderful opportunity actually, to try and support people who had a cancer diagnosis to change their lifestyle behaviours. And the initial focus was on physical activity based on some work done as part of the Cancer Survivorship Initiative in 2010, which identified just how important being active is for people who've had a cancer diagnosis, not just in quality of life and all the things that we would expect from being active, you know, sort of general fitness, general health, but actually the evidence, which is now really beginning to stack up and quite strong, how it can help prolong life, how it can stack the odds in people's favour in terms of recurrence and mortality, and that quality of life, so actually allowing people to take back control of their lives. So it was quite an exciting piece of work, and it was great to be involved in that. And the Macmillan programme looked at trying to develop a behaviour change service across the country. Part of that service was delivering kind of a high-intensity face-to-face session where people then had support over a period of 12 months based on their level of need. But my area was really trying to look at how we could support big populations of people, almost taking a public health approach to this problem, and see what the barriers and facilitators are to people being inactive, and then try and bring about change across different levels. Different, I guess, actors who influence people individually, and how we can bring about change in those people to try and move forward physical activity for people who've had a cancer diagnosis.
Awesome. Okay. One of the things that I found really fascinating about the work Macmillan was doing, and it's obviously part of what you'd done, was around the real focus on long-term behaviour change. So it wasn't about just the 12 weeks of putting on activities and then assume that people will stay active afterwards. It was like a long term. Macmillan was mostly focused around 12 months. And I know you've got some quite interesting views around kind of what the evidence is saying around what's needed. Can you talk a little bit about why you think that long term support is important and kind of what the evidence is showing around it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think that the challenge with evidence is that, and certainly research evidence, is a lot of it is shorter term. There is less evidence available for longer term change, just, you know, I guess because practically it's more difficult to run a research project that goes into that long term. That's not to say that evidence doesn't exist. The NICE guidance for individual behavior change obviously reviews all of the available evidence before putting together that public health guidance across the board, across different lifestyle behaviors, and that suggests that people are followed up for a period of at least 12 months, so monitored and provided feedback to help bring about change, and then providing support if necessary. So I think it's the same with anything, really. It needs to be person-centered. It needs to be based on what level of support individuals need. Some people might need 12 months. Some people might need 12 weeks to make a change. Some people, in terms of physical activity, might have been already active beforehand and actually just need a nudge in the right direction and not actually want or need any support after that. So I think it's difficult to say, to almost put parameters across, you know, a period of 52 weeks and say, well, we have to do this for 12 weeks, or we have to do this for 6 months, or have to do this for 12 months. I think it's about trying to identify and provide the level of support that you can. I think we have to be pragmatic and practical, certainly in delivery, around how we can support people. Like I said, the NICE guidance does say that we should follow up with people, and I think that's important, because then you can begin to identify those that might have lapsed and gone back into inactivity, and then you can provide more support for those people. But I think sometimes saying we've got to provide support for 12 months, all of a sudden, you know, program costs go through the roof, because it's just probably not possible to support big numbers of people, you know, on a one-to-one basis over 12 months. So I think it's about trying to identify which people need more levels of support, and which people might benefit from a lower level intervention, and that's what they need to change.
I think that's really interesting. It's the whole, because I've talked to people before quite a lot about the idea of doing longer term behavior change support, and that is the main thing that comes up that people talk to me about, is the cost. But what you're talking about is, like, maybe some people only need a short intervention, but they might need some more support in a year's time or 6 months' time, or some people might need even less support now. but more support later. And I think that's where, like, the stuff that you've been doing around the Move More pack, which doesn't involve, you know, it's not hugely expensive because the person, you know, it's a lighter touch intervention if that's what they're getting on its own, and the emails that we worked on together, it kind of gives a way of having some extra support for a longer period without mm-hmm. a much bigger cost.
Mm-hmm.
Can you, I've been kind of mentioning about this pack, can you explain to people what the pack is and kind of what it's for?
Yeah, sure. It's probably worth just quickly touching on a concept called the teachable moment, and that was something that in terms of a low-level intervention like the PAC, which I'll explain in a bit more detail in a second, could work, and that there's evidence out there that suggests that having a health concern where health becomes more salient to a person and becomes front of mind, there's an opportunity there that you could capitalize on a teachable moment. People might be more ready to change their lifestyle. They might think that changing a particular behavior is going to lessen the effect of and the severity of their health concern, or help overcome that health concern, as long as they have a good attitude towards that behavior and believe that, and they think others believe that as well, you know, important individuals like healthcare professionals, and they think that it's within their control to change, then it's more likely, the evidence suggests, that a behavioral intention might be created, and then there's an opportunity to create this teachable moment if they receive advice at an appropriate time, where low-level interventions like the Move More pack might be able to influence people to change. So that's kind of some of the theory that we were trying to work with this pack, is not just going blind and see who it works for, but actually if we can create that teachable moment in a healthcare setting with people who've had a cancer diagnosis who may be more amenable to change, and then signpost on to this low-level intervention, then it could be impactful. The Move More pack has been around, well, you'll know better than me, John, I think it was 2012 when it was first developed.
Jared worked with Kim on it originally, so I guess whenever she'd started, so something around then, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, and as part of the NHS information standard, which the Move More pack was part of, which basically means that information out there for patients is reviewed and updated with the best available evidence every 4 years. Yeah, it was up for review in 2016. So I started a piece of work probably back in 2015 to identify different behavioural theories that had been used in printed resources, to identify how, if it was actually needed, if people with cancer were amenable to a printed resource. And if they weren't, then it might have been a case of saying, well, actually, we don't need to do this. But actually, we found from a systematic review that 55% of cancer survivors said actually they preferred advice in a face-to-face setting, but they wanted to be active on their own terms at home with a printed resource. And now, that's not to say it's one-size-fits-all by any means, but there was an opportunity there for a group of people. So we reviewed the evidence, looked at different behavior change theories that could be applied to the current resource and identify gaps, reviewed the evidence for, I guess, an evidence-based practice approach where we looked at printed resources that had been designed and developed in the past in the research and saw what impact that they'd had. And then through the recommendations from that, redesigned the Move More pack to be a multi-component intervention. It was co-created with, I think it was about half a dozen cancer survivors, and there were six other experts across the country who were involved, whether that is behavior change experts, cancer experts, or patients themselves, to develop this pack. And it became a multi-component pack, which, for all intents and purposes, it is a printed resource in the main, but actually now has a series of online tools to support this pack. So online, people can access an online forum to share their experiences, and we try and link the pack together. So we ask people to write an action plan, an agreement, a commitment to what they're going to do to change, and post it on the online forum. There's an opportunity to talk to cancer specialist physiotherapists who are all volunteers and volunteer their time to respond to questions on the forum within 48 hours. And they were selected because from a survey of just over 1,000 people who'd had a cancer diagnosis, 76% said, we recognise physios as the experts in terms of physical activity and their condition. So we've given them access online to physios to answer questions. There's a DVD, like a home exercise program that people can follow, which also is included within the pack, but people can do it in a DVD player or watch it online. There's an opportunity to buy a pedometer, which evidence suggests, and again, nice evidence backs this up, supports people to be active, as well as download a diary, which is included within the pack, but they can download an additional diary if after 12 weeks they want to keep using the diary. And a series of video case studies so people can actually see and get that sort of social norm and see people like them becoming active. So we had video case studies from different ethnicities, different age groups, different stages of the cancer journey, so people could actually watch videos and get those messages that it is right, see the salience of the consequences, see that it is important to be active. The pack itself has a series of behaviour change techniques in it, starting from more of a cognitive focus, so understanding why being active is important and sort of asking people to think of the top reasons why they might want to do it before going on to something like a decision balance table. So what is good, what is going to be bad, hopefully the good outweighs the bad, before then going into more, I guess, behavioral focused processes where we're helping people to make a change, thinking about rewards, reminders, setting goals, enlisting social support. So there's a series of exercises people can go through, and we've tried to make it inclusive of friends and family so they can do it together. It comes with a wall chart so people can track their progress, and that acts as a prompt in a queue on a daily basis. And it also had motivational quotes from people who'd had cancer so they could see it every day, fridge magnets to put those up, and a series of leaflets of the most popular activities that people said they wanted to be involved in, which actually wasn't sport for sport's sake or exercise for exercise sake. It was activities of daily living and walking, as well as cycling and swimming, those types of activities. But some of it was, you know, just trying to incorporate activity into their daily lives. And then the final part of this resource was the behavior change emails, which were tailored based on people's age, their gender, and we broadly looked at a different stage of change or some of the concepts around the particular stage of change model, the trans-theoretical model, and applied them to the messaging that went into the newsletters, and then used previous levels of activity, which have been shown to be a predictor of activity post-diagnosis. We applied some of that theory based on previous levels of activity.
So there's a ton of stuff there that Justin's just mentioned. And what we're going to do, there's going to be a feedback form at the end to let us know that you've come on the call today. So in that, what I'm going to do is send you, if you fill that in at the end, then you'll get links to a lot of these resources, the pack online, the other McMillan resources that we talked about, some of the behavior change techniques that we've mentioned as well. So if you're not able to kind of take notes at a furious pace as we're going, then don't worry too much about it. So just to kind of take a step back for a minute, we've done research into the original pack. So there have been two versions of this pack, and Joe Foster and the guys, Tim, who's over at the British Heart Foundation National Centre for Physical Activity, and some other behaviour change experts had kind of put together the original version, and we'd done some research into that. So this is even before Justin had done work to revise it based on all of the further insight. But the response from people was amazing. So we had 92% of patients said that the pack, who had ordered the pack, said the pack helped them to increase their levels of physical activity. 55% of the healthcare professionals who issued the packs said that their patients were more active as a result. They were saying it was leading to a significant increase in quality of life. That's the patients themselves. 81% of patients who had concerns about getting active said the pack helped them to overcome their anxieties. 93% of healthcare professionals said McMillan was right to invest in the pack. 91% of healthcare professionals said the pack helped them to have a conversation with their patients about physical activity, and it just kind of went on and on. So we'd done this research study for McMillan just to make sure that they were right to be continuing to invest in the pack, and just the results from that were really clear to say yes, this is definitely really positive. One of the things that I was wanted to get your input on, and you kind of touched on this already, was why do you think this approach works well for some people, because you mentioned about some people who wanted to kind of do activity not necessarily in a group setting. Do you think that's it, or do you think there's a lot more to it than that as to why this kind of thing is appreciated?
Like I said, I think it's not certainly not a one size fits all with any intervention. I think what's important is about trying to identify who it works for. Is now an okay time to talk about the additional research that's happened on off the back of that, because that might help, or did you want to cover that later in the call?
Now seems quite a good time.
As part of the redesign, we wanted to make sure there was a robust evaluation of the new pack, and following a robust research process, a waiting list randomized control trial has been completed. The data has been collected, and we had 207 people who'd had a cancer diagnosis split into two groups. One group received a letter talking about the importance of physical activity very briefly, and then the pack, signposting to all the additional support online, and the newsletters. They were automatically signed up to the newsletters based on a baseline survey. And then the other group, the waiting list group, received just a letter and the guidelines for physical activity to see if there were any differences. And these weren't people who'd said that they were interested in physical activity at all. We kept that blind from people, and it went out to, I think it was about 10,000 of Macmillan's customers, their database, so people who'd had a cancer diagnosis, and said, would you be interested in helping to review some health promotion information? So we didn't talk about physical activity at all, so they didn't know what it was. At the end of 12 weeks, so we have followed up with people for 6 months with this particular program, but at the end of 12 weeks, when we then gave the waiting list the intervention, we found that people were twice as likely to make an improvement in physical activity over the control group, which is a significant finding. Obviously, there were many people that didn't make a change, but the majority did, and they were twice as likely to make an improvement of some sort. In addition to that, which is still being analysed, is a process evaluation to help identify particular types of people that might be more amenable to this type of intervention. So you can then begin to tailor the distribution of these types of interventions to identify those that might need higher levels of support and those that actually a lower level of support might work. I think it works for a number of reasons. I think that looking at the evidence, it suggests that people do struggle to get to face-to-face sessions through transport issues or the wide geographical spread. Even looking at the wonderful work Macmillan did, I think it at any one point in England there was probably 60 programs, which is great, but actually when you consider the size of England, that's a long way for people to travel to get to one unless they're within a certain drive time. So I think this provides an opportunity for people to get information and understand why physical activity is important for them and actually for their condition, which was identified as a motivator or a barrier if they didn't have information. It helps identify that social support is really important. It helps give some exercises about actually how to do it via the DVD. It gives behavior change exercises to support people to make a change. So I think it spoke to a number of the barriers, a number of the facilitators, and helped overcome a number of the barriers and gave people the freedom to do it within their own time, at their own pace, at a level that's right for them, in their own home. And for many people, that's what they want. Like I say, not for everybody, but for many people, that's what they wanted, to get themselves back on their feet, begin to take control, improve their self-efficacy, and then potentially go and join, if they wanted to go down that sort of activity for activity's sake route, go and join a walking group, which was the most popular activity by a long way, or incorporating activity into the daily life, or going to do something like swimming or cycling. So I think that's why it's important. I think it capitalises on the teachable moment. So we've got an opportunity there where we can create that teachable moment. And I think it meets a number of the facilitators for being active. But obviously there will be a group of people that do need more intense support and do need that behaviour change support, whether via motivational interviewing or cognitive behavioural therapy. This isn't saying that this should replace that by any means. It's saying that hopefully it will provide support for those that need it, and then those that need more support can go and access those services to try and free up the capacity of those services where they might be supporting people who don't need, you know, a higher level, high intensity support.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I mean, it's really quite clever, because what you've got here is a way of helping the people who need less support that costs less, that frees up the money to spend more time with the ones who need more support, and kind of customizing it really to what people are after. I think the other thing that's brilliant, and I know we've kind of talked about this a bit already, is that what you've got is a wide range of different ways of addressing people's barriers and helping them to get motivated about getting active throughout the pack. And some of them will be relevant for some people, and some of them will be relevant for other people, but they're all in there. So as long as people have the pack in their hands and they go through it and they have a look at it, they can find the bits that are relevant to them. And the same thing with the emails, and we'll kind of come back to that a bit more in a minute. But you've got in there stuff that helps people with self-efficacy, like you're saying. So we've got, you know, case studies, and we've got tips about getting started and showing that people like them can get involved with this kind of activity. And we've got stuff that helps people if they're not sure about whether this is an appropriate thing for them to be doing, because you've got the leaflet in there that's explaining about, you know, the benefits of physical activity and who it's not necessarily right for, when you can and when you can't go and do things, and which activities are appropriate for different people. So whatever it is, and we've, you know, obviously there's tons of research that you know, some that we've done for you, some of them that was done by other organizations, all kind of came into this and was looking at, there's all these things that are stopping people from getting active, and there's elements within the pack, within the emails, that are addressing all of those. So whatever it is somebody's facing, they've got that thing there. Now, in an ideal world, if money wasn't an option, you might kind of sit down or get on the phone with people and go through, you know, and narrow in and find the exact right one for them and go through just that one approach or those three approaches, whatever. But by having them all in the pack and in the emails, you've gotten a way of addressing all the different issues that people, you know, could be facing. And yes, like you're saying, it won't work for absolutely everybody, but like the research showed, it worked for a lot of people, and that was enough to help them to kind of get started. So I think it's
just to add to that, as part of the evaluation the data's being analysed at the moment, there was a process evaluation where I interviewed 21 people who'd used the pack, and asked them, you know, their process of using it. But it was also coupled with a quantitative survey which asked people which elements of the pack specifically that they'd made use of, whether it was never, rarely, sometimes, or often. So every element that I briefly covered at the start of the call, all of the online sections, the newsletters, all of the sections of the pack, we asked people to rate. So again, the hope is that thinking about confidence, self-efficacy to overcome barriers, self-efficacy to actually, you know, in terms of ability to be active and previous levels of activity, based on those, I guess, predictors of being active with gender, time since diagnosis, ethnicity, all sort of thrown in the mix, we can create a model to say, well, actually, for these people, they're more likely to use this particular element at this particular time. And then with the use of online emails, it means that you can still create one resource, and you can still create something that where you're not having to spend a huge amount of money to tailor everything, but you can then signpost people based on that to different elements of the pack, which we think will be more impactful for them. And that's, you know, relatively, it was much easier to do by automating that based on a series of questions that you might collect. So I think that's where you can begin to start adding the tailoring to what is in effect, you know, a population level intervention.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we've mentioned another few resources there. So we're going to send you a link to, when you fill in the form at the end, to the paper that Justin mentioned. And I think there was something else. There's some other resources, I think, that were mentioned. I'll make sure that they're in the email that you get afterwards as well. And so let's talk a little bit more about, I want to talk briefly about self-efficacy, because just in case some people aren't familiar with that term, the way that I describe this to people normally is, there was a meta-analysis of behavior change techniques done quite a long while back. They'd looked at everything that was the techniques were having the most impact on people's health behaviors. And they found that the top three things were self-efficacy, perceived benefits and social norms. And the normal way, the kind of normal language way I find of talking about this is to make the activity fun, easy and normal, and just into something that people feel like they can do, they want to do, and that other people like them do. And I think, and self-efficacy is the easy part of it. And I know that's not like an exact term for it. But I find that's kind of a nice way of starting to think about it. Just how can you make people feel like they can do this and they're able to do it, and that it's something that, that, you know, isn't going to be an enormous burden for them to take in part with it. Do you think that's a fair description?
I think in terms of my work, I would have two slightly nuanced definitions, one being a cancer survivor's their belief in their ability to be physically active, and in terms of sometimes called barrier self-efficacy, their belief in their ability to overcome the barriers to being active. And like you say, that's been shown consistently in the general population as being a key predictor of how active people will be.
So I want to move on more into talking about the emails now, and we've talked about them a little bit so far already, but you decided to work with us on developing a series of emails to support people to stay active. What we've done is we'd used the stages of change model for that, hadn't we? So we'd started with some assumptions around what levels people were at, what point they were at within the stages of the change model, based on their previous activity levels. And just for anybody who doesn't know the stages of change model, this is a model that's used quite a lot in behavior change for all kinds of health behaviors. And there's a few different stages: pre-contemplation, people who aren't thinking about doing this thing yet; contemplation, those who are considering it; preparation, getting ready, starting to get things in place; action, where they actually do something; and then maintenance. And of course, people relapse and fall back on a regular basis through those. And what we'd done was we'd made some assumptions, haven't we, about, okay, we don't know exactly what stage people are at, but we're going to ask them about what their previous activity levels were before they had cancer. And based on that, we're going to estimate what stage they might be at the moment. Can you explain a little bit about why you think that was kind of a reasonable assumption to make?
Yeah, I mean, there are questionnaires out there that from the people who developed this particular model around putting people into a stage of change. But some of the questions to ask for people who've found out about the Move More Pack in the real world, you know, people are going to come and either pick up this pack in an information centre. They're going to be signposted to it, hopefully from a healthcare professional, from training that's provided around being active and how important it is, and signposted to this more support, or as has been tested recently, they might receive it in the post. But for those finding it, it just seemed a bit strange to say, are you considering being active, because they've found the Move More Pack already. So they're almost not going to be in pre-contemplation because they've come to the pack already. And some of the questions were also asked things like, are you considering being active in the next 6 months? And again, it just seemed kind of a strange way to ask. So rather than apply it from a point of view of we're going to try and put people in different boxes of, you know, you are in contemplation, you're in action, you're in maintenance, you've relapsed, we took the processes that are applied across those stages. So if you investigate this series slightly more, what they say is different processes work at different stages, and there's a huge amount of overlap between them. But if you're thinking of a spectrum of different behavior change techniques, those that are more in the left-hand side, pre-contemplation, are going to be focusing on cognitive processes. So thinking about physical activity and increasing knowledge, this would be more for people kind of into contemplation, being aware of the risks, thinking about the health benefits, the salience of those consequences. Whereas on the right-hand side, those that are going into kind of action and maintenance are going to be thinking about rewards, or certainly the behavioral processes to change a more impactful at that point. So, you know, substituting different alternatives, you know, if you sit down and watch TV, for example, after dinner, maybe going for a walk, so substituting that family time, or trying to create habits, enlisting social support, providing a commitment, setting goals. So we basically said, based on a previous level of activity, if people were completely inactive before their diagnosis, that they're probably more likely, and it was an assumption, but it was a pragmatic assumption, because in the real world, you know, I don't think we can bombard people with lots of different questions. We said, well, if people in that, if people have been completely inactive before their diagnosis and are almost inactive now, then actually we need to give more information, which is going to trigger those cognitive processes. We're going to need to give more information about physical activity, and there's less point in saying, let's go and set a goal around physical activity, because they might not even be ready to even to do it yet. Whereas those that said that they were active, they'd had that self-identity, they were already active before their diagnosis, whilst their activity levels have more than likely dropped, we could go into those behavioural processes quicker. So earlier in the newsletter sequence, we could start talking about goal setting and signposting back to the printed resource to say, this is a section where you can set goals, go to the forum and make a commitment, tell people about your action plan. So we just got into those sections quicker. So it was almost like we'd had two parallel paths. One started on the cognitive processes and went through those cognitive processes for month one and month two before going into the behavioral processes, and also covering relapse, whereas those that were active before diagnosis, we spent less time and probably only covered cognitive processes at the start of the first newsletter, and then went quicker into those behavioural processes, and then it went into more habit and relapse prevention. So it was taking some of the concepts that you would apply if you'd measured which stage they were in, but obviously putting people in boxes is difficult. So it was kind of trying to take, it's a bit of a science and an art, really. It was trying to take the science and then apply it within what was available to us at the time. The results and the feedback have been that people did use the newsletters. People liked the newsletters, and they did like the fact that it's signposted back to them. But I'm still going through all of the qualitative interviews to be able to draw any robust conclusions. But that was kind of the theory behind it.
So what we've done when we worked on this with Justin is we've basically put together these two different series of emails based on whether someone had been active before treatment or not. And there were different newsletters that went out. There was one at month 1, 2, 3, 6, 9, and 12. There's, like I said, there's one for people who've been active before, one for people who were inactive before. And what we've done is, like Justin had mentioned, we'd use these different behavior change techniques in different emails, depending on what stage we thought they would be at, to support people to move on to the next stage. So we would have things about trying to decide if physical activity was right for you, if it was safe for you earlier on. And later on, we'd have resources about, you know, where might you go and get active, ways to go and find a walking group near you or some other activities you could do, link to the DVD. So it's trying to give people stuff that's appropriate for where they're at. And where it starts to get even cleverer is that we could have different case studies for different people. So if someone was an inactive woman aged 55 plus, they would see case studies from other inactive women aged 55 plus. So by asking these questions at the beginning, we're able to segment it and make it closer to the most appropriate support for that person of where they're at. And that's possible with email marketing software nowadays, if you kind of know how to use it. And then what we're also able to do, of course, is link back to the different resources on the McMillan website, the Move More Pack, the DVD, the support from the physio, all of these different things throughout the emails, so that people were getting reminded about all the different things that could be appropriate and all the resources that were out there that were helpful for them. And we've actually done more work using this kind of thing since as well. We've basically taken all the work that we've done with McMillan, and we've implemented that in other areas too. So we used the same series of emails but adapted and tweaked for the target audience in Buckinghamshire. And what we found there was that 38% of people who signed up to get a voucher to try an activity for free and get these emails, and that was the only support they were getting from us, there's nothing else, was 38% of them were more active by 6 months. And we're also still we're using these emails as well in other areas with Hounslow, with London Sport, to try and improve it even further, you know, and make it more personalised and more appropriate to people. Justin, can you touch on what the kind of results were that you'd seen from the this approach so far? You said you got some 6-month results in, didn't you?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier in the call, so far, because it's been evaluated as an intervention as a whole against the control group. So to do that following a robust research process, the best results in terms of the control are at 12 weeks to see if it had an impact over the waiting list group, which just received the letter. I looked at firstly an improvement, because that's what we were trying to achieve, is actually just improving physical activity and by any means. And that was because we didn't restrict the people that were coming in. So we didn't say, if you're already meeting the guidelines, you can't take part, because, you know, we thought actually there's relevance for this for everybody. And we want to know who it works for. It wasn't just about does it work, it was about who it works for. And we found that people are twice as likely to make a change. And that was significant, a significant change. They were twice as likely to make an improvement over just receiving a letter. In terms of, I'm just trying to look at my figures here, looking at the change from the intervention group from baseline levels of self-reported physical activity, there was an increase, it was actually just outside the level of significance. So significance would be, for those that have a scientific background, would be to 0.05, a p-value of 0.05, and this was 0.056. So it was actually just outside the level.
So, okay, we also
saw a bigger increase. So actually from 12 weeks to 24 weeks, whilst the increase wasn't as in mean levels of, we used something called the Godin Leisure Time Exercise Questionnaire, which gives, it doesn't give an amount of minutes, it gives a metabolic equivalent of physical activity, which I won't go into now, but we saw, in terms of that metabolic equivalent, 12 weeks, we saw a mean change of 6 points, and then from 12 weeks to 24 weeks, from baseline to 24 weeks, we saw a mean change of 8 points. So it continued to increase. So we were hoping it was just going to maintain a level and actually carried on going up. The waiting list control group, so even just receiving a letter, showed an increase at 12 weeks of about 4 points, and then that continued to go up again to 24. But then they received the intervention, and then it sharply went up. So what was positive is that actually the mean levels of physical activity were increasing and then being maintained at 24 weeks.
Amazing. Yeah, and we found the same thing actually elsewhere as well, the fact that the activity levels continue to go up, and that's something you don't normally see with physical activity interventions. It tends to go up during the intervention and then drop down again afterwards. And we've actually seen like levels of activity at 6 months be higher than 3 months and 12 months be higher than 6 months, when we've got this kind of ongoing support available for people. We had a project in Chichester where we were doing something kind of similar. It was with over 65s, but it was using direct mail for achieving some of the same ongoing support for them, as well as phone calls when they needed them. And we had 70% of people were more active by 6 months. It kind of went up to about 50% after 3 months and 70% by 6 months, and up by an average of an hour and a half per week. So I mean, it's definitely the same kind of results we keep getting again and again, that this long-term support through these kind of lower cost approaches is really, really valuable. Okay, I'm aware of time. It's coming up to 45 minutes in, so what I want to do is just go through a quick summary of where we've got to so far, tell you how you can get access to all of the resources. And then we're going to move on to a couple more points that I'd like to touch on if we can, and some questions that people had actually put in, because I promised we'd have a Q&A session.
John, just before we move on, can I just quickly say there's two, just very quickly, so it didn't just measure physical activity, because obviously we're trying to improve quality of life overall with, I guess, what we're all trying to do. And we also measured self-efficacy, so that this intervention also, from baseline to 12 weeks to 24 weeks, improved self-efficacy score out of 10 from 4.9 to 5.4 at 12 weeks, and then went up to 5.8 at 24 weeks in the intervention group, and also improved quality of life scores rapidly from baseline to 12 weeks, and then maintained those quality of life scores at 24 weeks in terms of mean values. So it wasn't just physical activity improved, self-efficacy and health-related quality of life also improved.
Amazing. Fantastic. Okay, so a quick summary of where I think we've got to so far. So obviously behavior change techniques, there's a lot of them out there. There's probably more than you might be aware of and more than you would have been able to use in the past. There's a lot of research, a lot of academic research about this out there now that's showing what is effective. We're going to link in the resources you can download at the end to a study from UCL that identified 40 different behavior change techniques that are effective at increasing physical activity levels. So 40 different techniques are available. And then there's all different kinds of ways you can implement those different techniques as well. And you can use these to engage hard-to-reach groups. So obviously we've talked today about people living with cancer, but we've worked on projects before for using this for people with other long-term health conditions. We've worked with the British Lung Foundation on using some of this for people with COPD and other lung conditions, and working with disabled people with Yorkshire Sport Foundation, different inactive groups, women and girls over 55. So these techniques are kind of available to you, and it's something that you can implement locally to help support people become active cost effectively over a long period of time. It's really powerful. You know, there's a lot here that's kind of available to you. You can use this to support hundreds or even thousands of people in your activities. So in the project we've done with Buckinghamshire County Council, we've got 3,000 people that signed up to getting those emails. And that's the number of people who are getting that, you know, 38% of them are becoming more active by 6 months. So it's an enormous, kind of, you know, got the potential to influence large numbers of people. People love this support because it's based around them. Like Justin had said, it's person-centered. So it's getting people the support they need when they need it and helping them to make change at their own pace. And of course you can automate this stuff, which brings the cost down, which means you can put more budget into the in-person stuff that you're also doing as well. So there's a couple of options of what you can do to start to implement these ideas. You can say, that's great. Got everything from today's interview. I'm going to try and do it myself, or you can get our help with it. And that's what I want to recommend for today. We can try and make this easier for you to get started. So if you're doing it yourself, obviously you need to learn about the different behavior change techniques, find the right research reports, find out what's effective, find different resources to link to help implement those different techniques, read through everything, set it all up, test it till it works. And the easier way, what I'd like to do as part of our kind of work of giving back to the industry that we work in, is we're offering a free strategy call, and it can help you to get started in the right direction. Help you identify what's the right resources for you. We'll have a talk, about half an hour, about you, your project, your target. I can help you understand what's likely to work for you based on what's worked for other people with a similar audience to you elsewhere. I can send you resources, case studies, contacts of other people in the industry working on this, research papers, help you to get management on board, all kinds of things. And then if you want support after that with actually implementing it, then we're here to help with that as well. We can help you get it set up. We've got an experienced team. We've got proven systems. Now, obviously, that's quite a good offer, and so these tend to get booked up. So make sure you're booking that straight away today. It's only available for people who've got working in an organization with quite ambitious big targets, so 200-plus people active in the next year. So if you're in a council or a county sports partnership or a bigger health charity, this is probably you're probably in that boat, and this will be right for you and available to you. So to be able to book that call, I'm going to give you the details in a second. You just need to fill in the feedback form. That's going to get you, that feedback form will get you all of the resources we mentioned today, all of the research papers, a replay of today's session, and that will then forward you to a page where you can book that time directly in my calendar. So fill in the feedback form now, and you'll be able to do that. And that's, you just have to go to makesportfun.com/Justin. And I'm just going to test that link, make sure that's working properly. It is not. Okay. Something's gone wrong there. I am going to just see if I can sort that one out. What is the right link? Apologies about this, everybody. Okay, I'll just paste the link here into the chat box, and I'm going to change it so that the link that I just mentioned works as well. Apologies, that wasn't already sorted. Okay, that's now set up, so that should work. There we go, all working fine now. So yeah, go to makesportfun.com/Justin, and you're going to be able to fill that form in. You're going to get all those resources. So I'm just going to give you 2 minutes to fill that in, starting now, and then we're going to move on to the Q&A session. So just another 30 seconds, let you finish off filling that in and book a time. And obviously people have got to get the calendar out and figure that part out. Okay, so hopefully that's enough time to go and fill that in. Justin, what if people are interested in learning more about getting evaluation of their program? Are you somebody to get in touch with about that?
Yeah, please do. Obviously, I work at London Metropolitan University now, and you know, part of my work is ongoing research. So we're here to help with research and evaluation of programs. Also, always looking for partnerships of where we might be able to get anonymized data to support our students here to work on real life data as part of maybe I'm the course leader for the Masters in Public Health, so maybe writing dissertations on real life data, which again, you know, some of those might be able to help support you. So it could be a partnership working arrangement, or we're here to, you know, potentially to have discussions around evaluation and research type projects, maybe getting ethical approval for any project you think that's ongoing or just about to start, so we can use the data to add back into the research and try and overcome, as I mentioned, that knowledge do gap to stop academics just writing wonderful reports that sit in papers that don't actually make it into practice. Just trying to overcome that.
Okay, let's so how do people get in touch with you then?
So just by email is probably best. Are you going to send out my email address, or shall I just say
it's
it now?
It's not in the link at the moment, so do you want
okay.
to tweet that
yeah,
in
my
now?
My email address is j.web, so j.web, and that's double B, and then a number one, and then that's at londonmet.ac.uk, so j.web1@londonmet.ac.uk.
And if you filled in the feedback form, I will email that out as well.
Yeah. And if anybody's interested in a master's in public health, then also get in touch.
Okay, so let's move on to some of the questions then. So we had a question: if you take a whole systems approach to interventions, the physical activity interventions, as a guide, what budget should be allocated for the behaviour change element of the intervention? Kind of what percentage of the overall budget should be for behaviour change?
Mm-hmm. So I think a whole systems approach is brilliant. Individual programs, you know, programs focusing on individuals are effective, but they're only so effective. And I think when we look at something like smoking, that's taken a health and all policies whole systems approach, we can see big differences in certain lifestyle behaviors. Obviously slightly different than physical activity, but a whole systems approach is certainly the right way forward. All I would say to this is difficult to say a percentage of the budget, but there's two things that I would consider and with that question. One being there's behaviours to change across a whole systems approach, whether that is changing the professionals of changing the practice of healthcare professionals to give advice, whether that is changing the behaviour of somebody within a local authority public health team to raise funds for particular types of programmes, whether that is trying to influence and members of a health and wellbeing board to put it further up the priority list. So I think there's behaviours to change across the board, and you can apply theories and frameworks to help overcome those behaviours across a whole systems approach. I think in terms of where to invest money, I think it's one of the most important things is to understand the behaviour in question in fully. And then based on the position that people are in, understand what is changeable within that position and what is going to have the biggest impact. And then based on what is changeable and within your gift to change and is going to have the biggest impact, then focus resource to that point. Certainly from our research, again, is focused on cancer survivors, that changing in the individual motivations and individual drivers was more important than facilities and because if people had that drive, then they would find a way to overcome a lack of facilities or a lack of opportunities. So that's why more investment went in supporting people rather than trying to develop lots of opportunities. So I think it's understanding the barriers and facilitators to change and understanding the behaviour in full.
Next question. How do you feel behaviour change theory has been used and applied in sport and physical activity research in recent years?
I think it's improving. I think that it's been used quite a lot in terms of physical activity from the health sector, and I'm not sure that information about how it's been used in the health sector has necessarily been communicated as well as it could have been to people working in sport development. And I think there's lots of lessons that could be learned from what's happened before. So now it's being used more in a sport development context when you're almost not starting from scratch. I think that it's important to understand the theory because there is a danger of having a basic knowledge of a theory and then applying it incorrectly and then not seeing the change that you hope to see. We know from lots of evidence that theory-based, evidence-based interventions are more successful than those that are based on what seems like a good idea at the time. But for that to be the case, it's about applying it correctly. So there's lots of theories out there, and it can be a bit of a minefield. I think trying to find one that's relevant, that you understand, that might have been used in interventions in the past that are equivalent to what you're trying to achieve, and then understanding that one theory or maybe two theories is better than trying to learn them all, because it's just not possible to learn them all in any great depth. So I think it's better to understand one that works for you and then apply it properly. And then if we can keep evaluating, then it helps add to that research. But I think it's definitely improving. But I think, like I say, it's just important to apply it absolutely correctly and try and learn from what's gone before.
Amazing. Okay. We're coming up to an hour, 59 minutes in. So I think we're going to call it a day here. Thanks very much, everybody, for coming onto the call today. Justin, thank you very, very much for taking the time to share your experience and what's worked for you. And everybody listening, if you haven't already filled in that feedback form, then make sure you do, so you can get all of the resources that we're going to link to: the NICE guidance, the Move More page, the Move More pack, the UCL behavior change techniques, the report about the Move More pack, the replay of today's session, paper on the redesign that Justin's done, and there's that opportunity to book the call with me to get a bit of help to get started with the next stage and planning out how you could use this. So that's at makesportfun.com/Justin if you haven't used it already. Justin's email address, again, was j.web1@londonmet.ac.uk. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Perfect. So if you need any support around evaluation, do get in touch with Justin as well. So thanks, everybody. Thank you very much, Justin, and hopefully talk to you all soon.
Great. Thank you.